Welcome to Season 2 of the Devon Wildlife Warden podcast, and happy 2022, belated as those New Year wishes might now feel. In this episode, I will be looking at coppicing. What is it? How is it done? And why can it be beneficial for wildlife? I'll also be bringing you any updates that have been sent in by other wildlife wardens in Teignbridge and telling you what they've been up to. As part of this, we're going to be joined by Dave Smallshear, who is the chair of Chudley Wild, the Chudley group of wildlife wardens, and he's going to be giving us an overview of what they've been up to and what their plans for 2022 are. The Devon Wildlife Warden Scheme is run by Action on Climate in Teignbridge, or ACT for short. The idea is to have wardens in every parish or ward who can help their wildlife in a wide variety of ways. I am the Wildlife Warden for Abbots Kurzweil, but we have many others and are always looking for more. We do all sorts of things, from promoting wildlife gardening and recording local wildlife sightings, to working with clubs and schools, and commenting on local planning applications, and much, much more. It's all about each warden doing what they feel is necessary in their area and which lies within their comfort zone. ACT's Wildlife Warden Scheme would not be possible without the generous assistance of our donors, details of which can be found in the episode notes. Many thanks to them all. Now, just to start off the episode, I wanted to put a quick reminder out that if you have hedges, trees, or any other bushy plant growth that you plan to cut back, now is the time to get it done before birds start nesting. I've already spotted birds out and about looking for nest sites in my garden, and with climate change, we are likely to see birds starting to nest earlier and earlier. So although we traditionally think of bird nesting time as March to September, it's probably best to err on the side of caution and do any major cutting back earlier rather than later. If you can help to spread this fact on your local community notice boards and Facebook pages, that would be great too. Okay, so let's move on to coppicing. What is it exactly and how is it done? Well, coppicing is basically the rotational cutting of trees and then letting them grow back. The most commonly coppiced species in Britain is hazel, and that species is usually coppiced about once every 10 years. So, if you have a hazel woodland or plantation, you'd divide it into 10 segments and cut 10% every year. Traditionally, this would have been done to harvest wood for making things like hurdles and thatching spars, and so by keeping a rotation like this going, you'd have a steady flow of materials every year to use. However, these days, coppicing is more likely to be done to benefit wildlife. By cutting the trees, the canopy is opened up and more light hits the woodland floor. This in turn benefits ground flora such as bluebells, wood anemones and violets. And as the coppice starts to grow and more shade is introduced into the woodland, climbers like brambles and honeysuckle start to take over. Coppiced hazel also tends to grow back in a more bushy manner, and as such, a diverse range of habitats is created in coppiced woodland. This provides more food and nest sites, as well as general cover for a huge range of species, and is particularly beneficial for our native dormouse. A species which is protected in the UK under the Wildlife and Countryside Act of 1981, and is a priority species under the UK post-2010 biodiversity framework. Coppicing hazel woodland can therefore be of great benefit to this particular species, as well as the many others which live alongside it. As I've mentioned before, I'm fortunate enough to have my own little patch of woodland, and the previous owner planted rather a lot of hazel coppice. So our woods provided an ideal training ground for wildlife wardens to come along and learn about coppicing and to have a go at it themselves. Peter Chandler, wildlife warden for Exminster, happens to have extensive experience with coppicing and woodland management, so he agreed to come along to my little woods and provide some training for a small group of wardens on the 15th of January. It was a brilliant day. We had a campfire to warm our cockles and cook a few jacket potatoes and make tea, which certainly added to the ambience. And here's Peter talking a bit about coppicing on the day. As usual, do excuse the quality of the recording, as it was taken in the field.
to coppicing. Even now, I mean, I don't know if Emily got anywhere where someone might have pea sticks or bean sticks or anything. But we're doing it for nature, so therefore what we would do is instead of using all the wood, we'll lay it in between the stalls. A stump of hazel is called a stool. But also, if you've got deer around, then we tend to cover it over a bit so the young shoots don't get eaten so much by the deer. Okay?
We don't have a deer issue here, so...
No, so we can just lay it in between, it will rot down, and then go. There's something here which I noticed when I walked around with Emily the first time, is there's hardly any nuts around.
I've noticed that this year.
Yeah.
And last year, the hazelnuts, they were really low.
But I think that's general here, is it? Do you tend
to... Yeah, we moved in 4 years ago, and we see the odd one, but we don't see a great number.
So I think actually what we're doing coppicing, it might stimulate young growth, and maybe in 4 years' time, it takes about 4 years before they start to fruit, it might invigorate them and make more, which is why we want the dormouse box. I'm very keen on dormouse.
As you might have heard in that clip, Peter was also kind enough to bring a dormouse nest box along for us, so that's been installed in a patch of hazel. But I should mention at this point that you do need a license to handle dormice, so I will have to resist temptation and make sure I leave the box well alone. But fingers crossed, it will provide shelter for any of these gorgeous fairy animals who want to move in. We then went off and had a go at cutting back some hazel coppice. The ideal tools for the job are the bow saw and long-handled croppers. If you are going to do any of this yourself, you need to cut the hazel stands as close to the ground as possible, and ideally at an angle so any rainwater can run off and not sit on the cut stumps, which might in turn cause rot. As was also mentioned in that clip, our woodland seemed fairly devoid of hazelnut evidence. So with any luck, more active coppicing work over the next few years will help to improve the hazelnut crop and encourage dormice and the many other species which depend on this vital natural resource. Now Peter is back in our woods next month leading a session on hedge laying, so I'll be talking about that a bit more in the next episode. But moving on, I'd like to talk a bit about what the other wildlife wardens in Teignbridge have been up to. The team in Chudley, otherwise known as Chudley Wild, have been rather busy, and their chair Dave was kind enough to spare a bit of his precious time to tell me all about what they've been up to for this episode. And before I share it, I'd like to say that I'll be checking my microphone levels more carefully next time I attempt to do an interview via Zoom, as the sound quality at my end is not great, but Dave's is, and fortunately it's mainly him doing the talking. So here he is. Dave, great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. Perhaps we can just start off by getting a quick bit of background on the group. How and when did Chudley Wild come about?
We formed rather informally about 6 years ago, and a group of Chudley wildlife enthusiasts basically got together. I think it was in our house. It was quite a long time ago now. So in the days when you could do that sort of thing freely without worrying about infectious diseases, we had a good chat. We decided, I proposed that we should call ourselves Chud Bag. We have Chud Fest, which is a sort of carnival festival week in the summer. So I thought Chud Bag was quite good. BAG standing for Biodiversity Advisory Group.
I'm glad you cleared that up.
I thought I'd better do that. That's a little bit highfalutin. So somebody suggested Chudley Wild was a much more modern name and a bit more appealing. So, yeah, we went ahead with that. One of our early enthusiasts, I can't quite remember at what point we became a committee that ran things, but it was probably within the first year or so. But one of our committee members managed to get our logo done. So the Greater Horseshoe Bats in Chudley Caves are one of our local wildlife, I can't really say attractions, but species
highlights.
Of importance. Highlights, yeah.
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 So we incorporated a greater horseshoe bat into our logo. And we've done a variety of things over the years. We, interestingly enough, just about a year ago now, had about 100 members in very informally members. They are in effect an emailing list. So we send out newsletters and organise volunteer events and guided walks occasionally and indoor meetings occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened about 12 months ago is my wife, Sue, so Sue is the secretary of Chudley Wild, and I took over as chair, as it happens, 12 months ago.
Right.
Sue had this brainwave that we should be trying to link up gardens around Chudley, gardens that were being managed positively for wildlife, and that they could form, in effect, stepping stones and an extended nature reserve in many ways. So she thought up the idea of gardening for wildlife. And so we had a project that started, as I say, about a year ago. And that asked people, our members, to let us know what they were doing for wildlife in their gardens. We suggested that they should be doing certain things. So we had a sort of menu of good things you could do in your garden that would benefit wildlife. And in return for agreeing to do this, we would give them a sign to put in their garden.
Lovely.
So Sue designed a flyer, a two-sided A5 leaflet that mail dropped finally within the constraints of COVID. That went out to all the residents in Chudley.
Amazing. And I think you had some pretty good uptake from some of the feedback you've given us previously on how that went.
Well, that went very well. And we've actually given out about 100 signs. But almost as importantly from our point of view is we've more than doubled our membership. So
wow.
We now have about 220 something people on the mailing list.
Yeah. And obviously sort of printing flyers and getting signs made up isn't free. So did you get some funding for that, or how did that work?
We funded the flyers ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And Sue has made all of the signs and hand painted them. So
wow.
Sort of cost free, but yeah.
Certainly not from a labour perspective.
No, indeed, no. But she's a bit of an artist and a crafty person, and she likes to do that sort of thing. And that's been great. And so the feedback we've had from people has been wonderful. And I think in combination, I mentioned Chud Fest earlier. Well, part of Chud Fest in the past has been open gardens. And these have been typically rather formal gardens, as you might expect from the National Open Gardens Scheme.
Mm.
But Chudley Wild was asked to take on organising open gardens last year, which we did do, and it proved fantastic, not least because we had a proportion of the gardens were wildlife gardens, and we were able to spread the message more widely and had lots of opportunities to talk to people doing the rounds of the open gardens about what you can do for wildlife. So we were, in a way, nibbling at the at those gardeners who I think traditionally have had more formal gardening training, if you like.
Very, very tactfully put, yes.
Yeah. So they don't like the necessary degree of messiness, perhaps untidiness, shall we say.
Yeah.
Wildlife gardening. And that proved, as I say, really very successful and was a great boost, I think, as well to our project.
That sounds amazing. And that's something you're continuing with this into 2022?
We are indeed, yeah. We've still got people waiting for signs now. So the production line is still going.
Sue's going to be busily painting away then. Do you need to put out an appeal for materials, or have you got enough bits and pieces to keep you going there?
Well, we actually have one of our members has a hoard of wood, let's say.
Excellent.
Recycled wood. So we're finding uses by way of recycled wood.
Excellent. And I understand you've managed to secure a grant of £3,000 to design and implement a nature trail around Chudley. So how did that come about? And can you tell us any more about that?
Yes, one of our committee members took it upon her to apply for a co-op community grant. So I think these are perhaps each year they have several worthy causes, and the co-op members can choose which of the local causes they want their dividends to go to. And as a result, we found that we were going to get, much to our surprise, what turned out to be just over £3,000. The project proposal was for a nature trail around Chudley Town, and we've actually just this last week got Chudley Town Council's blessing to use a dozen stopping points around town. So we've already got a route planned. We're going to have the money will be spent on rubbing posts, so brass rubbings.
Lovely.
Thinking particularly of children on this route. We're also going to have QR codes built into the posts, so people with smartphones can scan them and get more information. But there will also be a leaflet available from the town hall. The town hall, in fact, will be the number one, the starting point of the trail. It's a breeding site for swifts, so that's one of the things.
Wonderful.
We want people to look at, well, at least for the 3 or 4 months that they're around town.
Yeah.
To be able to do that. But we have nest boxes on the town hall, so there's something to look at there. But they'll also be able to pick up a pamphlet there with a map on, and they can also alternatively download it from our website.
Oh, that would be brilliant.
Actually, that we've progressed on this year is we've been using a page of the town council's website for archiving our materials, our newsletters, and publicising ourselves. Over the last couple of months, we've got our own website just about up and running. We're struggling a little bit with the technology, but getting there. And one of the advantages is that we've been able to use MailChimp for sending out our newsletters. Mm. In the past, we've struggled. Sue has had issues with Gmail not liking bulk mailings, basically.
Yeah. MailChimp's a great program. Give them a nice plug there for anyone wanting to do a newsletter for their community. If anyone listening to this wanted to do something similar and create a nature trail in their parish, do you have any advice? I mean, did you kind of think about how you would go about it and use, do you know if that was kind of used as part of the pitch for the funding, or is the planning of it coming kind of after the funding application?
A little bit of both, to be honest. And some of the practicalities are coming now, like what size posts we need and so on, and where we get our the brass rubbing pieces from. But the proposal to the co-op had to be fairly detailed, and we built into it quite a bit of detail. The committee was involved in the final application, as it were, the details that went in. So we all had a say in that.
Great. And can you tell us what other plans Chudley Wild have got for 2022? Is there anything else in the pipeline?
Yes, we've recently been talking to one of the two project officers from the River Teen Restoration Project about what our members could be involved in. Not just this year, but in years to come. So the project is aiming to get local volunteers, so citizen scientists in effect, involved in various ways, some of which are a bit more scientific than others, looking at the catchment. So Chudley has a little bit of River Teen, But we also have Bramble Brook on our western boundary and Cape Brook, which goes smack sort of through the middle of the parish and right past the edge of Chudleigh Town.
Mm.
And so what we've decided is that we're going to have a sort of Cape Brook year this year. We're going to really plug Cape Brook, what we know about it, what lives there, what lives in it, and start the process of looking at river flies, which are some of the organisms that live in flowing waters, and we'll be getting some training through the project on that. And that's the sort of thing that the project is very keen to engage other wildlife wardens with. So if you live, you know, if you're within the Teen catchment, then please think about that.
Mm, yeah, sadly, we're not here in Abbots Kerswell, but you know, certainly other parishes are. So
no, but there's no reason why you all shouldn't be concerned about the flowing waters in your parish. We've heard quite a lot in recent months about sewage, for example, and water quality issues. And we do have an issue all across Britain with the quality of flowing waters, and it's not just sewage that's an issue. There are as road runoff and
agricultural chemicals and things,
various things coming off the land, that we could do with keeping an eye on.
That's we
will be getting water testing kits as well, so we can check on things like the acidity of the water and the turbidity, so how much sediment is coming in. So many settlements, of course, have building sites these days around. You get a lot of soil washing off those into watercourses, which causes problems.
Of course.
And one of the drivers behind this teen restoration project are the anglers who are concerned about particularly the trout and salmon breeding sites. And one of the issues they have is the concretion of their spawning beds. So this is where sediment finds its way into what should be lovely clean river gravels and stops the salmon and trout being able to find suitable places to spawn.
Okay.
And there are other issues as well, like trees blocking watercourses and other physical barriers, artificial barriers in some cases, that fish find on their route. We have trout and eels in these brooks in the parish, and in fact we have one of our members who posted on I think it was our Facebook page, he posted a video of an eel that he was feeding. So at the bottom of his garden, he has Cape Brook, lucky chap, and he was throwing little bits of bread into the stream to feed trout initially. And then this eel started coming up out onto the bank and feeding on the bread. So so we know we've definitely got eels and trout in Cape Brook, that is.
Wonderful.
And we've had his next door neighbour was very fortunate in watching via the light on his mobile phone one evening an otter eating a fish so isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful. I have to say my husband works in Torquay, completely unrelated, but my husband works in Torquay, and he phoned me not long ago to say, oh, this might be something you're interested in as a wildlife warden. I've just gone past the willows up near, you know, near the turnoff, and there's an otter in the middle of the road.
Good Lord. Wow.
And he actually phoned the police in the end, and they said they'd had several calls. But we clearly have otters running around. I think that's a little offshoot of I think it's a tributary of the Teen up there. But it's good to know that they're around. Great to know.
Well, they're around more often because they're mainly nocturnal and keep to the watercourses. We tend not to see much of them. But one of the things that we're going to do as part of our Cape Brook project is we'll be doing some otter surveys. And that's not strictly looking for otters, but signs of otters. So their spraints, their droppings on rocks and so on, and also looking for footprints. And a few of us went out on Saturday afternoon, in fact, and walked a a section of it. Sadly, we didn't find any otter sign. I'm sure they're around. And we're going to be using maybe camera traps as well to see what...
Great idea.
...along the water courses, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, wonderful. I know I've spoken quite a few times in the past about the West Country CSI project. So is that part of what you're going to employ for the testing kits and...
It is the Citizen Science Initiative. Is that what it's called?
That's right, yeah.
I had to ask what it meant. But yes, that'll be part of it. Yes, that'll
good. Be good. And I mean, do you have to be on a major waterway, do you know, or can anyone with any waterway get involved with that?
The restoration project is focused on the Teen and its tributaries. So basically anything flowing in to the river, ultimately they're interested in. And they will go down as far as Teen Grace. So they're not actually going right down into Newton Abbott, down towards the estuary, but stopping at what I suppose is it'd be close to the tidal limit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you. So is there anything else that you'd like to mention or talk about while you've got the ear of our listeners?
Well, one of the things that have evolved with Chudley Wild over the years has been several subgroups, if you like, forming. So we have for a long time now had a bunch of volunteers who've been doing things like litter picking. We've also been managing some of the wide grass verges in Long Drive, which is by the primary school, managing them for wildflowers and as nectar sources for butterflies and other insects. So the volunteers group is one of our subgroups. Because the greater horseshoe bats are quite important in Chudley, we have a bat group. So we have a bunch of people. We've actually managed to, we got a grant from Devon Mammal Group to buy some bat detectors. We have a few of these that we can circulate around our group, and some of the group have got their own bat detectors. So we've been doing some fairly structured surveys to particularly find where the bats are commuting around and out of town, the site where they spend most of their time, i.e. During the daytime, is in caves at Chudley Rocks, which is right on the edge of the town. And we're very keen, because this is a bat species that doesn't like bright lights at all, we're very keen to try and maintain dark corridors. So particularly where new developments are concerned, trying to make sure that the planning proposals and so on are carried out with bats in mind, so we don't have bright lights shining along their known commuting routes. And also as well, trying to find out where they're feeding, because obviously if the bats have nowhere to feed, and they're fairly specialist feeders, they're big bats and they like big prey. Right. So we know that they like dung beetles. So we actually have a set of small fields on the edge of town that were given to Devon Wildlife Trust, that Chudley Wild has taken some responsibility for keeping an eye on and managing. And the Batfields Reserve, as we call it, have a commuting route through it. And one of the things we've done every year for the last 3 or 4 years, and twice last year, is we have a community bat evening. And we have a tame bat catcher, so a licensed bat trapper, who puts up various devices, mist nets, and a thing called a harp trap along this commuting route, and we catch bats and birds actually before the bats come out. So birds are ringed as part of this process. He's a licensed bird ringer too. And last year we had, on our two events, we had over 100 people at these, including about probably a third or a half of them were children, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant.
Catch and show small mammals too. So we have wood mice and bank voles, and we also have some, you can see in the background, sorry, the listeners won't be able to see these, but
I was going to ask what was in the tanks behind you. Actually,
screen behind me are a couple of tanks which have harvest mice in, and they're great performers, at these events. So basically, we talk about mammals, small mammals particularly, although we have foxes and deer and badgers on this site too.
Wonderful.
So it's a great little spot and a great place for one of our regular and most popular outdoor meetings.
Cool, yeah, you've made me want to come to the next one now. It sounds brilliant.
By all means, do. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I might have to make the trip over. So I think I'll just sort of finish up really by thanking you for taking the time to speak to us today. I mean, you guys really are an inspiration and one of the more active groups in the Wildlife Warden scheme. But, you know, I think other groups are hot on your heels, and it's good to see more and more people taking an interest and really wanting to do something for their local wildlife, which is really fabulous to see.
Brilliant. Yeah, well, yeah, all strength to you good people out there listening to this, and every success.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dave. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Huge thanks again to Dave for taking the time to speak to me. Robin also got in touch from Iddeford to let us know about an informal survey they've undertaken to get an idea of the frequency of some of the species living within their parish. From the results, the first thing that stands out is how rarely many of the 12 species they asked about are being seen. A majority of respondents to the survey had not seen a badger, a hedgehog, stoat, kingfisher, trout, or grass snake in the last year, and only 3 species were recorded more than once on at least half of the forms. And those 3 species were foxes, bats, and slowworms, so it's good to know that they're at least doing well. But a generation or two back, all 12 of the species asked about would have been common sights, so there is a cause for concern. However, better news is that bats were seen frequently by about 2/3, slowworms frequently by nearly half, and foxes and frogs frequently by about 1/3 of respondents. Barn owls were also seen frequently by about 14%, and yellowhammers by about 25%. Now, the result there for yellowhammers is encouraging, as this is a species that has declined nationally by about 60% in the last 50 years, so there must still be some thick hedges and uncut margins in Iddeford ideal for them to find a home. Now, we also heard from Shearer from Ashton Parish. They spent last Sunday planting a new orchard in the village hall field. Only 8 trees, but 32 people were there to do the work, and they then enjoyed tea and cake afterwards. They fed back that it was lovely to have a community event after nearly 2 years of COVID constraints, and what a wonderful thing to get together for too. We shall look forward to orchard updates in the future from Ashton. And as always, Ogwild have been super busy at the rectory field site that they've been helping to take care of. This month, work was undertaken to remove some dead and dangerous trees, and new trees have also been planted. Winter is the ideal time to do this sort of work when trees are dormant and less susceptible to the stresses of being transplanted. In total, 33 new specimens were planted, the deciduous trees just inside the main gate, and an orchard area has been created near the copse. The main gate has also been repaired, which will make access to the site that little bit easier. They also had a visit to the site from Till Hill, who I believe are a forestry company, and who were impressed with the amount of work they've managed to do in the short time that they have been looking after the rectory field site. So a huge round of applause should go to the Ogwild team for their tireless work in keeping this all moving. And while we're talking about Rectory Field, there's just one more thing to mention. Apparently, there has been a bit of a stinky smell reported by those who have been along to the site. Pew! But you will be pleased to know that they've had a drainage expert take a look at it, and the matter is set to be resolved soon. So with a bit of luck, you can have a lovely picnic there this spring without the worry of a nasty odour putting you off your food. And before I finish up this episode, I just wanted to mention a couple more things. Firstly, Devon Wildlife Trust are hosting an event on the 1st of February called Wilder Communities. This online session will give you an exclusive preview of DWT's new Wilder Status initiative and provide a chance to meet the Wilder Communities team and give your feedback and ideas. Now, this is a useful event for anyone interested in supporting their local wildlife, so it's right up our street. A link is provided in the episode notes, or you can search on the Eventbrite website for Devon Wildlife Trust Wilder Communities event. There are also lots of online talks coming up with plant life, so I'll include a link to their webpage about those in the episode notes too, in case you'd like to sign up. And just to finish off, I'd like to suggest a couple of small things which you can do at home at this time of year to support your local wildlife. Many of our wild birds may be struggling to find food at this time of year, so putting out fat balls, seeds and nuts is a great idea to help them along. And don't forget to keep an eye out for ice in your bird baths too. If we get a cold snap, birds and other creatures can struggle for water if everything is frozen over, so here are a few suggestions that might help. Firstly, you could try leaving a ball floating in the water. This will drift about in the breeze and it helps prevent ice from forming. You could also try making sure that there are dark coloured rocks in or around the bird bath, as these will absorb solar radiation and help to melt ice faster when the sun comes out. And keeping it as full as possible will also help. The greater the volume of water, the longer it will take to freeze over, so with any luck, your garden birds will do even better if you lend them a little bit of a helping hand. So I'm going to leave it there for this episode, and we'll sign off as usual by just saying that I hope you do feel inspired to do something, however small, to help your local wildlife. This podcast was narrated and produced by me, Emily Marbe, with music by Poddington Bear.